Hello.
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 Hi.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Welcome to the brand new year of the show.
Oh, my gosh. 2022.
We're back.
Happy New Year.
Living large. Happy New Year, everybody. Hope it was a blast and safe and sound and fun and that you weren't out in a crowded street somewhere watching a ball drop. I think most of those got canceled.
I think so.
I don't know. I never understood the appeal anyway. Not a big New Year's fan, you know? Like, it turns midnight every night.
I have very much enjoyed New Year's parties at, like, friends' houses.
Any excuse.
At our own house.
Well, I hope everybody's having a good time. Hope everybody's nailing those resolutions. You know, I was thinking about it since our last episode when we kind of talked a little bit about it. And if you follow me on Twitter, yeah, I already kind of talk about this, but just stop engaging. Stop getting into it with people who are idiots. When you see somebody post something that pisses you off, keep on scrolling, y'all. Just go past. There is absolutely zero, maybe even negative impact in your jumping in and fighting with somebody about some dumbness.
True. It just makes people dig their heels in more than anything.
It really does. Nothing gives these monsters more energy than just feeding them food, this fuel that they're just burning and thriving off of. I always go back to Merlin, the miniseries with Sam Neill, which is a great miniseries. If you haven't seen it, it's so good.
I haven't.
I'm going to tell you the end because it's like 25 years old. That the evil queen has, you know, has all his power, and eventually Merlin's like, hey, we've been fighting her, but you know what? Stop paying attention to her. Just ignore her, and they all turn her backs on her, and she's like, what? What are you doing? And tries to use her power, and it doesn't work, because she doesn't have any belief. I'm telling you, that's real.
That is real.
That's real.
You know, our friend and producer, Ben Bolin.
Oh, Ben.
Has been saying since college that he thought that the currency of the future would be attention.
Yeah.
He's been saying, it's like, I don't know exactly how it's going to work. I just think that because we're competing so much for attention in a way so different from the past, that eventually it's going to be essentially currency.
Right.
And I think he's kind of right already because, like, your amount of followers on social media can lead to job offers.
Sure.
It can lead to money. You know what I mean? Like,
definitely.
Those weird Twitter ads, you know, everybody puts that weird vibrator under their viral tweet or whatever, those lights, galaxy lights or whatever.
Right.
And they're getting like $10 to do it, you know? So I was like, I know he's kind of like right about that.
He's definitely right. And we love attention.
Oh,
and we've
even
gotten some great attention from you all lately.
True.
In fact, I think we have to go into our mailbag here because I think it's time for a
mail call.
Mail.
Awesome.
We got a great message on Instagram from Taylor. She says, hey, I have been listening to you guys since your first episode. You got me into podcasts, and now I listen to yours weekly. It's given me a whole new world of learning new things. After listening to the Chris Crow and Walnut the Crane episode and the Annie Oakley and Frank Butler episode, it just so happened to pass my feed on Facebook that people still shoot bison for sport. It gave me a new appreciation for the lives of these animals. It took a whole lot of work to get their population as big as it is now, so I hate to see them being hunted like they are. Thank you for making me see the world a little differently and helping me open my mind to all the different kinds of love people can share for each other.
Well, thank you so much, Taylor, for reaching out. That's really good to hear.
What a great note.
Yeah. Oh,
I love that.
Yeah, and the bison thank you as well, I assume.
Right.
I don't speak for the bison. No one speaks for the bison. They speak for themselves.
I think I responded and was talking about how weird it is to think about hunting from the city of Atlanta, of course, which
is
not a place you need to hunt in.
No.
The cars do all the work for you.
You have to hunt for parking spaces.
Hey-o! But other than, you know, but there are rural places where hunting is necessary for population control. So it makes it really hard to be extreme about it. But they are hunted for sport, which is really annoying.
You won't catch me hunting short of the apocalyptic scenarios.
Right.
But my my cousin recently pointed out that hunting elk is a form of population control that keeps, you know, the ecosystem kind of in check. if the elk run wild, if there's too many, then all kinds of things can happen from there. We've all heard the stories about
how
you snip one part of an ecosystem and the whole thing gets out of whack. So, you know, there's a point at which humans are part of the ecosystem.
Right.
And they sort of regulate the number of licenses they hand out, and that sort of helps control, you know, how many how much we keep the population in check, that kind of thing. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I get it. I don't need to do it.
No.
And I'm not going to do it.
No.
And the bison certainly don't need it, unless there's an ecologist out there who could tell me otherwise.
It's like, it's gone out of control. The work has been done too well.
But there's just like, you know, a fraction of what there once were, even still. So
it's true.
So leave them alone.
Yeah, leave the bison alone.
Listen to Taylor. Thank you so much for writing in and saying those kind words. It means so much to us when we hear from you guys.
Yeah.
And we look forward to more wonderful messages.
Yeah.
It makes us feel good. Kind of like today's episode might make you feel good.
Yay.
Because this is the story of Dashrath Manji. And this is a brief but beautiful story. It's a great way to start off the new year, too. We figured this would be a good one to kick things off because this guy was inspired to start a new project. And he did not stop until it was done.
Yeah.
He beat the odds, he defied the naysayers, and he did it all for love. So I say we dive right into this story of devotion and determination and start this year off right.
Let's do it.
Hey there, friends, come listen well. Eli and Diana got some stories to tell. There's no matchmaking or romantic tips. It's just about ridiculous relationships. A lover might be any type of person at all, an abstract concept or a concrete wall. But if there's a story worth a second glance, we'll put it in our show, Ridiculous Romance.
A production of iHeartRadio.
Our hero today, Dashrath Manji, was born in 1934 in Galore, a small village in the state of Bihar in northeast India. And as usual, we'll just toss out the disclaimer that we are doing our best here.
Yeah.
Try to learn these pronunciations. And I think, you know, we listened. We learned. We're doing all right. But please, as always, let us know if we're slipping up here.
Yes, please.
Dashrath was born into a Musahara family, which is the lowest order of India's caste system. And the caste system in India goes back thousands and thousands of years to ancient times, and it's been through many, many, many changes and reforms over the centuries, but it endures even today. And it's so complicated that, you know, we went to look into it, and just the Wikipedia page alone, which is not our primary source of info, but just that page is a multi-day read.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's probably a whole India's Caste System for Dummies book out there.
Right.
And there's probably a Cliff's Notes of that, and there's probably a Spark Notes of that.
Right. And then, like, a really bad blog that somebody wrote based on the Sparks Notes.
Right. Exactly. And then some two white idiots doing a podcast trying to summarize it. Oh, wait, that's us.
Oops.
You know, you don't have to ask Saraswati, the Hindu goddess of knowledge and wisdom, to know that we should not be your primary source of information on how the caste system in India works. But it is important to the story, and it is really fascinating. So we're going to do our best in our usual sort of crash course style to try and sort through some of it for context around Dashrath Manji's story. So let's start today's episode with a quick fling with history.
I don't want to go to school.
So, generally speaking, a lot of Westerners have heard of the caste system of India, but it's hard to fully understand this concept without having lived in it. When going to Indian sources, we learned that historically, Westerners have been overlapping two terms as one. Thanks, Britain.
Mm.
The Varnas are a broad classification of people based on a division of labor dating back to ancient India. And it was all about what you have to give to society.
Okay.
And those divisions were the Brahmins, who were the priestly class. They contributed their knowledge.
Right.
They were like religious leaders, teachers, you know.
Okay.
Educators. Then the Kshatriyas, who were the warrior class. And they contributed strength or administration. Then we have the Vaishyas, or the trader class, who contribute their business skills and financial savvy, and the Shudras, or the servant class, who provide manual labor.
Now, originally, these Varnas were based on your skills and not like your birth. You weren't born into one. Priyanka Mahawar wrote on Medium that, quote, in fact, the Varna system was devised to classify a person on the basis of his attributes or characteristics, right? So, I don't know, like Speculation Station, right? At some point, somebody says to you, oh, you've got tough hands, so you'll be a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're like, hey, buddy, you cry a lot, you should be an actor, right?
Hey, you make a hell of a cappuccino. How about the Shudras class for you?
The barista class. So the intention was that people in these different classes could work, you know, within their class, within their Varnas, without interference or competition from others. So it kind of just narrowed the playing field and you're all kind of working together.
No side hustles in the Varna system.
Right, right. Oh, you're a podcaster? Well, then you're a podcaster. That's
for
it.
For life.
But, of course, as India changed over the centuries, those Varnas were subdivided into the Jati system. And this was much more based on your birth. Jati means birth.
Oh, okay.
And so for a time, this was where last names were even coming from. For example, Gandha means smell. So Gandhis were perfume sellers.
Okay, so it's like Smith was probably a blacksmith of some kind,
right,
at some point.
Right.
A candler made candles at some point.
Banks. My people probably lived on the riverbanks or managed the money. I don't know. If you ask me, probably lived on the bank of the river.
I was going to say, I see that more clearly.
All right, Brown. Let's not get into what your family was doing.
Brown is definitely a criminal reason. There's no reason to be named Brown unless you're trying to go incognito. And what it seems like happened next was that the many, many subdivisions of Jatis became condensed and reclassified into the caste system that we know today. Once again, thanks to the British.
Uh-oh.
Starting in 1881, colonial ethnographers used Jati to count and classify people in British India, which is now India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Burma. So it's like a huge, huge geographic area.
Yeah, the Brits used to own a lot of places, if you hadn't heard.
Susan Bailey, who's an anthropology professor at Cambridge, said that the census, quote, ranked, standardized, and cross-referenced Jati listings for Indians on principles similar to zoology and botanical classifications, aiming to establish who was superior to whom by virtue of their supposed purity, occupational origins, and collective moral worth.
And real quick, also, don't want to, this is a cherry-picked history over thousands of years. It was not solely the British actions that led to this now. But that was one of the major things. But of course, there's tons of influences from within India and outside that, you know, helped shape the caste system into what it is today.
That's kind of reminding me of our Shah Hussein Madhulal episode.
Yeah.
When we were talking about the two-state India-Pakistan solution.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people blame the Brits for coming in and being like, okay, let's separate y'all.
Right.
But, you know, amongst Pakistan and Indian sources, they're like, nah, we were already talking about that. Let's not chalk it all up to the white people.
Right,
we had
our
own ideas. So.
They didn't help.
No.
The British Empire
rarely
came into a place and made things better overall. but certainly was a big influence here. And what it leaves us with today is this four-caste system based on the titles of the Varnas, but ideologically coming from a very different place. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of the concept of the Jati, where you were born determines, or who you were born to determines who you are and what your lot in life is.
Yeah. Where, how far you can go.
Right. But we're going to categorize them under these four Varnas that you guys have already kind of set up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's complicated. It's ancient history that's still going on today. And stay tuned for our corrections corner when someone inevitably comes in and educates us as to what really happened as opposed to whatever we just kind of tried to summarize real quick.
Which I look forward to.
I do. Please.
Yeah. Vineet, I know you're listening out there in India.
Vineet's messaged us once or twice.
Yeah.
He loves the show. And I bet he's got some
Come on,
feedback.
Vineet. Let us know how we doing.
But hopefully that's a good rough idea. And, you know, the caste system isn't quite as strong today as it once was. For example, caste discrimination isn't allowed in hiring or educational practices.
Nice.
You know, isn't allowed. I kind of wonder how strong that is. Mm-hmm. Priyanka, in her article, says that this doesn't mean the caste divisions are fading. She says that the caste groups are incredibly important, for example, as political focus groups, right? Mm. So a political party might try to gain the favor of an entire caste and say, well, these people are really for me.
Yeah.
And that kind of helps boost your votes.
I mean, that's sort of, we do that in America.
Oh, absolutely. Certainly. Absolutely.
Special
I got to get the gamers. I got to get the gamers to vote for me.
Uh-oh.
Once you get that demographic, you're in.
Yeesh. Which ones? Are we talking about Gamergate's gamers or like cool Twitch streamers? I don't know.
You know, now. And then she says that many people also find support in belonging to a classification of people that are your peers, right? So I know that if I meet anyone else in my cast, we're cool. We're mm-hmm. on the same level. I don't have to worry about who's better, who's worse. But the idea is you can get some sort of sense of community from it. Mm-hmm. So some people see a lot of benefits to it as well. Now, here in America, we can only attempt to understand this concept that's very particular to a certain region, mm-hmm. very far from us, by drawing parallels to what we have here mm-hmm. ourselves, right? You know, did things suddenly get better in America when we declared that segregation was over?
Right.
I mean, obviously, great, good, we ended segregation, but you can still see today what's left over from that and what's still happening. And, you know, it did not magically erase all the issues that came with it.
Right. And even with, you know, you're not allowed to discriminate in hiring practices and
right.
stuff like that. It's like,
still,
yeah, you're not allowed, but like the person reading the application is sometimes
right.
certainly
right.
being discriminatory for whatever reason.
Right.
And
sometimes
they
don't even know they're doing it. So
a lot of times
don't. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, you can do things like just make a workplace incredibly uncomfortable for somebody
right.
so that they will leave,
mm-hmm.
so that you didn't actually discriminate, but you did make it just real hard for them to
yeah.
be going to work every day.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, a lot of these divisions endured both here and there.
Yeah.
And some ways that we classify each other are discriminatory, like mm-hmm. we said, but of course, others are a source of community pride also.
Sure. Yeah. It's thorny, let's say that.
Yeah.
A thorny issue. And again, you know, as we've said, we should not be your primary source on of info on the caste system. If you want to be an expert, you should go talk to some people who are Indian
yes.
and live yes. there and they know about it. But hopefully we've sort of laid the groundwork about the four tiers, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, to better understand today's story. But wait a minute now, didn't we say that Dashrat was born to the Musahara caste?
That's right.
So what is that? Well, there are four Varnas, and those titles have been used to classify the four castes in India today, as we've said.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an implied fifth classification that
oh.
falls beneath all the others.
Oh, implied things are the worst.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And these are the Dalits. Or the official government term in India is the scheduled castes.
So, going one level deeper here, the scheduled castes, or SCs, are the most economically and socially disadvantaged groups in India. For a long time, they were known as untouchables, and the higher castes literally thought of them as exactly that. Within the Dalits are a community called the Musahar, which literally means rat eater. And that was due to their main former occupation of catching rats, which also ended up being one of their main sources of food. Today, there's many Musahars who are still forced to do that same work due to extremely difficult economic circumstances. 97% of Musahars live in rural areas where they're mostly landless farm workers, and they're among the most marginalized people in India, even among the Dalits. Their literacy rate is between 1 and 3%, and the vast majority suffer from malnutrition and have very little access to healthcare, as, you know, facilities, hospitals, things like that in these regions are few and far between.
Mm-hmm. That brings us back to Dashrat Manji, who is known as the Mountain Man of Bihar, who, as we said, was born into a Musahar family in 1934 in the village of Galore. But we've spent so much time learning that before we get into his story, we're going to have to take a quick commercial break.
Whoops.
So stay tuned for his exciting story when we return.
Be right back. All right, and welcome back to the show.
When Dashrod was growing up in the 1930s, of course, the Dalits had virtually no access to education. Mm. This was still a time when most considered them untouchable still.
Right.
And his lot in life was simply going to be to work as an agricultural laborer. That's what he had to look forward
to. Yeah.
And some Dalits in the state of Bihar where he lived did own land. But as we said, Musahars did not. It's kind of that, that sociological thing where everybody needs someone to shit on. It seems like Musahars were the lowest of the lowest of the low.
Yeah, there's a quote from an article in Quartz India by Amitava Kumar. He says that India allows you the luxury of a million inequalities. You can be a schoolboy selling tea to passengers, sitting in a state transport bus, but you are royalty when compared to a shirtless, barefoot village boy from what was traditionally considered an untouchable caste. So it's exactly that. I mean, there's someone for everyone to look down on, except the Musahars,
right,
who even among the Dalits were the bottom of the barrel.
Right. So on one side of Dashrath's village stood a small mountain about 300 feet tall. Each morning, Dashrath would make the trek over this mountain to the fields on the other side, where he and others like him worked tirelessly all day long. He would break and haul rocks from the field and then till the earth for farming. And this wasn't bad for a Musahar, who can sometimes go up to 8 months out of the year without finding work. And they generally make less than a dollar a day.
Well,
so he's doing pretty good with this horrible rock-breaking job.
Right, which is saying something.
Sounds awful.
Now, Dashrath had a wife named Falguni, and each day she would bring him lunch. And together they had a son and a daughter who are only mentioned in like one or two articles, but food is incredibly hard to come by for the Musahars already, with some diets frequently consisting of plant roots and snails. And even rats are still a primary source of meat for some Musahars even today. But Falguni and Dashrath were doing, like we said, comparatively okay. She would pack him roti, a round flatbread, and a small container of thin curry. She would wrap that all together in a cloth, and then she would fill a clay pot with water, leave her children to play in their hut, and she would hike over the mountain to bring Dashrath his meal for the day.
Wow. Day after day, she made this trek, and it reportedly could take hours.
Can you imagine, if you had to walk hours to bring me lunch?
No.
First of all, can you imagine bringing me lunch?
Not really.
I barely bring myself lunch. No.
Also, I might be like, well, why don't you just take it with you in the morning? Like, leave it to hang somewhere.
I would,
but I guess it might spoil.
I considered this, and out in the sun all day, the water would probably evaporate.
Yeah, that's
true. The food might spoil. I don't know. It might get eaten up by something. It doesn't have, like, a locker he can put anything in,
That's probably why.
Mm-hmm. He's probably also carrying his tools out there.
True, he didn't have hands for it. That's so true.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it was real nice of her to do this.
Yeah.
I don't know if all the other dudes had a wife trekking over a mountain for them, but if they didn't, they were jealous. I was also going to say, isn't it funny that the food for really poor people in India is snails, which is a delicacy in France for very rich people.
Yep.
So just to say, I don't think rat is a delicacy anywhere, but
probably not.
So this mountain was covered in jagged rocks, so injuries were just an accepted norm. And when deaths happened, they were unsurprising. And this mountain didn't just block villagers from their working fields. It also kept the whole community isolated. The nearest town was a day's walk away or well over an hour by car. Mm. So to reach a market or a hospital wasn't something you could do in a hurry. And getting urgent medical attention was impossible.
Wait. You're telling me that if I'm in Galore and I pull up the Starbucks app, there's not going to be one anywhere nearby?
There's not going to be a Starbucks for miles.
That's outrageous.
Can you imagine?
Something has to be done. I don't even like Starbucks, people.
Where is the Starbucks?
Hello. Is it 5G out here or what?
Sorry, we don't have any Shudras out here to make your damn coffee. Well. Still, every day, Falguni hiked over the narrow mountain path in the hot sun for hours to bring her husband some meager rations of food and water.
Wow.
And every day at noon, he would look to the mountain and see her walking to him. And he would greet her and thank her for lunch. And he'd take a brief rest as he ate and rehydrated. And then he'd go back to work. And Falguni would wish him luck and then make the long walk back home.
Again, I'm just imagining myself with my laptop on the couch, my feet on the coffee table, air conditioning's blasting, or the heat this month, you know, looking up and seeing you in the very short distance to the kitchen with a half full glass of water, mm-hmm. walking all the way over to me, setting it down, wishing me luck, and then walking back. None of this has ever happened.
Now, I have certainly refilled her water in my time.
Yes, yes, yes. You do fill a clay pot.
I fill a clay pot with
Brita.
Water.
Brita pot.
But I think that's beautiful. You know,
it's
they don't have much.
Touching.
But this
yeah.
lovely one way of showing such love and care
yeah.
is so really powerful.
This
me.
Is, I mean, this is such a raw example of two people who are dependent on each other, mm-hmm. you know, and that's where a lot of their love comes from. It's just yeah. that, like, it's you and me.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, that's it's it. You and me and miles of desert in every direction.
And no one's going to take care of either of us
yep.
except for either of
yep.
us.
Yep. And they care enough to do it. That's
yeah.
beautiful.
Yeah.
So one particularly hot day, we're in 1959 now. Mm-hmm. Dashrath lay down his load and looked to the mountain for his wife, but he didn't see her. And he waited a few minutes, but decided, you know, I got to get back to work.
Right.
I can't be standing around here staring all day. I got the man watching me.
You got time enough to lean. You got time enough to clean.
That, absolutely. You got time enough to look for your wife. You got time enough to break these rocks and haul them away. So he goes back to work, and he didn't really understand what was taking so long. And with all the heat, and he's hungry, he hasn't eaten anything, and he starts to get angry.
He's hangry.
Yeah. And minutes, can you imagine talking to a Musahar person about the concept of hangry?
Hangry? They're like, wait, there's like, times when you're not hungry?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm sorry, you get upset when you're hungry? Because that's like, I don't know.
I'd be mad all the time.
Yeah. How about get over yourself when mm-hmm. you're like, oh, I need a snack. Like,
right.
How about I get one meal a day? And sometimes right. it's a rat. So
yeah, I wonder what the Musahar would say when they saw a Snickers commercial.
Right, yeah. Like, you're not yourself when you're hungry.
Yeah, okay. Send me a Snickers bar, please. And thank you.
Right. God. Oh, we're such pigs.
True.
Comparatively. Comparatively. True. So he's getting hangry, and minutes turn to hours, and he's getting weak and tired because his blazing heat.
Right.
Again, he's not eaten his one meal for the day.
Or had water, very important.
Right. And then late into the afternoon, he finally saw her coming down the mountain. But something was different. She was moving slowly and holding herself up on the rocks as she hobbled down the rocky path. She had no water pitcher with her, and she was limping. He ran to her, and he saw that she was crying. And she was terribly injured. Near the top of the mountain, she had slipped on a loose rock and slid down several feet, shattering the water pot and seriously injuring her leg.
Ugh. Dashrath had to leave his work at great risk, of course, because just leaving work was not looked kindly on by his landlords. But he did leave his work, and he helped his wife get back home. She was injured and he was exhausted, but there was only one choice. Back over the mountain.
Oof.
So together they went, and it took all his remaining strength to help her walk. By evening, they had finally arrived back at their hut, and as she lay in her small bed, injured and weeping, Dashrath got angrier. He was furious that this was their fate. Every day they made the same horrible journey over and over again, risking their lives for a sip of water, and no one was looking out for them. He knew that if anything was going to be done, he would have to do it himself. He's quoted at thebetterindia.com as saying, quote, "That mountain shattered so many pots and claimed so many lives. I could not bear that it had hurt my wife. If it took all my life now, I would carve us a road through that mountain."
And the very next day, he put his words to action. He grabbed a hammer, a chisel, and a crowbar, and he climbed to the top of the mountain. He put the chisel to the earth, swung his hammer, and cracked open the first rock. He threw both pieces, and they rolled down the side. One down, a kajillion to go, basically. Immediately, he knew, this is going to be my life's work. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy, I just took on a project.
Yikes.
You know?
But I can't stop.
No. Dashrath and Falguni didn't own much. They had a small hut, a few tools, and some goats, which aside from his work in the fields, the goats were their primary source of income through like goat milk, goat cheese,
sure.
more goats, you know.
Having goats that they
right,
sold.
Right. But with his wife injured and his time devoted to this project, he had to sell the goats. So this gave them like a little boost of money to survive on, but also he had to quit his day job in the fields. So I say day job, like, I mean, you know, as opposed to his moonlighting or his passion project.
As a road builder.
Right. But it wasn't long before they were struggling to eat. Of course, the income was gone. He was doing this pro bono.
Mm-hmm.
Dashrath himself would skip meals just so his wife and kids could eat some days. As other villagers continued across the hill, sometimes he would lay down his chisel and help them carry their things for a small fee. Mm. That was about all the income he was getting.
Days turned into weeks, and villagers thought he was crazy.
Mm.
An article in the Indian Express by Avinash Celestine said that the landlords who owned the fields said, you know, he wasn't doing anything great.
Oh.
It's the duty of a Musahar to do work like this.
Wow.
So if he wants to build a new road, he's just doing what he's supposed to do anyway.
So they're literally like, oh, so you're building a road from Galore to the next town over?
Mm-hmm.
That don't impress me much.
Where's the yes. I'm ready for a Shania Twain parody anytime.
We'll talk to her. Friend of the show, Shania Twain.
Friend of the show,
we'll
Shania
ask her.
Twain. That don't impress me.
I don't think it would go over well.
I mean, I don't know. If we told her it could improve the caste system of India,
well,
wouldn't she look like a bitch to say no?
Maybe, but I'm not sure that it you would. And I and Shania Twain should be deciding what's an improvement
know, right?
to the
we're
caste
like,
system of India.
We're going to fix it, guys, with a Shania Twain parody.
Oh.
Oh, God. So, yeah, anyway, they were just being, you know, total jerks about this and kind of being like, great, he's doing what he's supposed to do and we don't have to pay him for it. Bonus.
Right, right.
Ugh. So day after day, he chiseled away at this mountain, seemingly making no progress for a long time, which is a very discouraging part of a project.
It's oh, when, yeah.
You know, you're like, I can do it. And then you do that one rock and then you're like, oh, this is going to be a lot more work than
oh,
I
yeah.
thought.
Yeah.
And then you do rocks for like 100. It feels like 100 years and you're like, it looks the same.
I
what
barely
the fuck?
Touch. I know that's me cleaning my room. You know,
I see you cleaning any room.
I've been here for an hour and it looks like I've done nothing.
It's so, messier, in fact.
So I feel you, Dashrath.
And sadly, shortly after he started, his wife Falguni became extremely ill. Mm. The medical care she needed was in the nearby town of Vizierganj, but the road there was around a mountain, which was a 75-kilometer or 46-mile walk. And so, unable to make the journey, Falguni died at home.
Mm. Now, most sources we saw say that this was a direct result of her injuries. But there was a few that suggest that the illness was unrelated, that her death wasn't caused by the injury, but that's definitely what sparked his passion to build the road.
Right.
But that not having the road was still why she died, because the medical services couldn't get to her
there,
in time.
Yeah, still
either
directly
way,
contributed.
Yeah, either way is the same problem. And regardless, her death only fired up his ambition more. Furious that such a fate had befallen so many Musahars in his village and now his own wife,
mm-hmm.
he stormed back to the mountain and worked even harder, breaking and hauling rocks, prying boulders loose and sending them tumbling down the mountainside. He wiped dirt and sand from his eyes and he savored what little water was available to him. And the villagers were totally bewildered by his dedication. He said, quote, "When I started hammering the hill, people called me a lunatic. But that steeled my resolve."
Mm-hmm. He faced his own injuries dealing with loose fitting or falling rocks. But after 10 years of work,
yeesh.
Those villagers looked up and saw a cleft in the mountaintop.
A decade. Cutting away at this every day.
I'm impressed.
That's like when after I'm cleaning the bedroom for like an hour and a half and I call you, I'm like, come in, look. The top of the dresser's cleaned off. Like, wow, okay.
Wow, you're getting somewhere.
I'm seeing a difference.
But this gap, of course, was shocking. They didn't expect him to get this far, I'm sure.
Right.
And his work suddenly seemed to be paying off. And like in human ways, obviously, now that it looks like it's going to be a success, suddenly he got more support.
Uh-huh.
He said, quote, "Though they taunted me at first, there were quite a few who lent me support later by giving me food and helping me buy tools."
Ah, the little red hen story.
Yeah, the little red hen story.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. So Dashrath was turning into a local hero, but still at the end of the day, it's just him and his chisel and hammer chipping away at one rock at a time. It would be in 1988, another 12 years later. More than 22 years after the day of his wife's injury, that the people of Galor looked to the mountain as Dushrat moved his final rock and walked through a pass 360 feet long,
wow,
30 feet wide, and 25 feet deep.
Unbelievable.
Seriously, an unbelievable accomplishment. And the villagers started calling him Baba, an honorific title reserved for the most revered men.
360 feet long he dug with his own two hands, a chisel, and a hammer.
Now, I know—
For 22 years.
Seriously. Like, he— And he thought he was making no progress for a lot of that time.
Right.
So you have to think, like, the dedication
right.
to be like, no, I'm just going to keep just literally chiseling away,
yep.
literally.
Yeah.
It makes me, and I know you won't necessarily get this, because weirdly, this is such a weird black hole of your film life, but Shawshank Redemption. He's chiseling that hole.
Yeah.
And that was also impressive, but not as impressive as this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this
And he
is...
couldn't even hide his mountain pass through a behind a poster.
Right? No, there's no poster big enough.
There's no poster
not
big enough.
Not in Galor. Now, this road shortened the distance between Vizierganj and Galor to only 5 kilometers or 3 miles. So you've got doctors, markets, jobs, and schools all now a simple walk away.
Wow.
I mean, a simple 3 mile walk, which to me is just like, whoa, 3 miles.
Way too long.
That's a Sunday at most.
But, you know, when it when you used to
when
have to cross
to
an
be
entire
so
mountain.
Long. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's insane. People from 60 villages in the area were benefited by this road.
Wow, 60 villages. That's
yeah.
amazing.
But Baba Dushrat was not done.
Mm-mm.
No, no, no. He had gained so much local acclaim from his work in Galor that he knew he could use it to continue to help his people. So let's take a quick break and find out what he did next right after this.
And we're back.
So after Dushrat finished the road, his fame grew and grew. Soon, he was being featured in international news, right? The mountain man, the landless laborer, some called him.
Wow.
This guy from nothing, from nowhere, had done this incredible thing. I mean, this is like something out of an epic poem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this
yeah.
is such an incredible feat for one man. It sounds like mythology. But yeah,
people get through a mountain with fire, you know, freaking dynamite.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just like literally hammering from the top.
Because no one else would. And all this time that he's digging, it's not like anybody showed up with any dynamite.
No.
You know?
Right.
But he knew his work wasn't done. He said, quote, "I will keep working for the development of the villages here so long as I am alive. I am neither afraid of any punishment from any government for my work, nor am I interested in any honor from the government." He wanted the road paved and connected to the main road. He wanted more and closer hospitals. He wanted more access to fresh water for his people. So to get the government's attention, as if all this wasn't enough.
Cutting right? through a mountain didn't get their attention.
Yeah. He took a walk, and he walked along the railroad tracks all the way from Galor to New Delhi, which is a 1,000-kilometer walk, or like just over 600 miles. So in American perspective, that's like walking from New York City to Cincinnati, Ohio.
No. Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Crossing, you know, all of New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Ohio to get there.
Well, to be fair, it's probably more like going from Cincinnati to New York.
Well, that, okay, yes. Regionally speaking, probably a little closer. But also put that in, like, basically the desert.
Right.
And along the way, he gathered signatures in this diary that he kept with him from villagers and particularly from railroad station masters. So he could take this to India's central government and say, hey, look, all these people agree that we need more stuff out here.
Yeah. Too remote.
Yep.
The government couldn't help but be impressed, obviously. And they promised to help expand and pave his road. They also gave him a 5-acre plot of land in Galor for himself. But, you know, Dushrat, he said he was not interested in any honor or reward, so he donated the land back for the construction of a hospital.
Yeah.
They nominated him for the Padma Shri, which is India's fourth highest civilian award. It's given to citizens in recognition of their distinguished contribution in various spheres of activity, including arts, education, industry, sports, medicine, and public affairs. But officials at the Forest Ministry fought the nomination, saying that his work was illegal.
Wow. Sorry, Dashrath. You didn't get the permits.
What? I mean, the road's built, guys.
Right.
Like, what are you going to do? Put all the rocks back? Like, get over it, Forest Ministry. How weird that the Forest Ministry is the villain right now.
Right.
That makes me think of the Environmental Protection Agency being the villain in Ghostbusters.
In Ghostbusters, I know, right?
Like, oh, no. But once again, Dashrath shrugged all this off. The award was literally the least of his concerns. He said, quote, I do not care for these awards, the fame, the money. All I want is a road, a school, a hospital for our people. They toil so hard. It will help their women and children. Dashrath is pure, all
right? Oh, for real.
So pure.
Yeah.
He's like, don't touch me with your shit.
Well, I mean, look, this guy has never had anything.
Right.
So what interest does he have in, you know, this material stuff or these, you know, immaterial awards, these like honors and stuff? That what is that going to do? Is that going to put food on my table?
Right. That's,
you
true.
Know,
that's true.
Is that going to help out my neighbors that I care about, that bring my wife back? None of that.
I guess that's a mindset thing, because
yeah.
I might think, well, I have never had anything. So
right.
Now it's great to have something.
Yeah.
Or, oh, if I get a bunch of money, I guess I can invest it in my community in
yeah.
ways I see fit or whatever. But it's so cool that he was just like, why are you even looking at me? Look at the
yeah.
whole town. I'm
yeah.
trying to really pull focus here to the whole town.
Yeah.
And you keep just looking at me.
Right. Right.
So that's really cool of him.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we it is a mindset thing. I think you're right. Like, we have a tendency to want a little bit more than what we have. So when that somewhere like here,
mm-hmm.
Kind of snowballs into today, where I have like shelves full of bullshit. Like, I don't know what this does. I don't know where I got this. I don't know what this is for.
Yeah.
It's just a trinket. It's just a thing.
Yeah.
It's just some old food I'm throwing away because I didn't want it after I bought it.
Right.
You know, like that's a whole different mindset from just a whole different lifestyle, I guess.
That's very true.
And it does make you kind of think like, oh, geez, maybe I should be a little more selective about what I want and what I have and what I do with the things that I do have.
Right. Or reframe what I think I need
yes.
versus what I want
right.
versus
right.
whatever.
Yep.
What I think I'm entitled to and
mm-hmm.
so on. But I think you're right. That's such a cultural thing, kind of like us not being able to ever really fully grasp how the caste system really works
right.
emotionally for
right.
people in India.
Yeah.
I'm not sure in plenty of other countries they have a great way to grasp our mindset of more, you
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm
yes.
not even trying to talk shit about capitalism,
right.
you know, whatever, but we do in this country very particularly are like, the more stuff you have, the bigger your house, the, you know, that means you're doing great.
Yeah.
That's all you need to be successful.
Right.
Is stuff.
Yeah, that's a general mindset for sure. Yeah.
Or, and awards too, like honorifics
oh, yeah.
and feeling very like special. That's
yeah.
also very important to us
mm-hmm.
in a way that maybe is very unusual to someone like Dashrath, who's like,
yeah.
I don't feel entitled to shit because I was never promised anything.
Right.
And I don't know, like you say, what the fuck is this award going to do for me?
Right. But, and like, for example, if the government of India wanted to give us an award for this episode,
I
like,
mean,
we would totally take
I
it.
Know, yeah, I'd be like,
you know?
Well, sure, we did a great job.
Yeah, I mean, that's just our mindset. That's just the culture we live in. That, like, yeah, constant praise
it.
Is pretty good, and we'll take it.
Yeah, we must deserve it
no,
if you're giving it.
Yeah, it's not going to, I can't eat that award, but I'll take it.
I'll take it.
You know?
Proudly display it on my wall.
Yeah. All right, so back to our story. In 2007, Dashrath was diagnosed with gallbladder cancer. Now, the state government paid for all of his medical expenses. He was such a known figure at this point. He was such, you know, kind of a folk hero
mm-hmm.
that they went ahead and took care of things for him. But that same year, sadly, he died at 73 years old. Chief Minister Nitish Kumar went to his village after his death to return his body and personally offered a state funeral. But even still, Dashrath's work wasn't over. He had made countless trips to the state government of Bihar, and 30 years after his road was complete, they'd finally paved and connected it to the main road. But sadly, this didn't happen until after his death, so he wasn't able to see it. But today, the Dashrath Manji Hospital stands in Galore. It's a 6-bed hospital. It's got a 5-star review on Google.
Hey. Well,
by the way, 11 reviews. I think a number of them just say, like, he was a great man. So I think it might just be people who, like, heard the story and went and... So, hey, maybe go drop a review for...
Why not?
I'm not going to tell you whether it's a good hospital or not.
Have
but
no
it is
idea.
A hospital in that region where they did not have one. And that sounds better than nothing to me.
Absolutely.
And overall, you know, all of this was for love. Mm-hmm. Dashrath said, quote, I started this work out of love for my wife, but I continued it for love of my people. If I did not, no one would. Which the BetterIndia.com article says that these are words which reflect the reality of our country.
And that article, published in 2015, said that the people of Galore still suffer in poverty. The road has changed a lot in terms of access, but they still struggle to feed themselves. Mm. Still, there have been major changes across India for the Musahar.
Okay.
In 2014, Jin Ram Manji was elected as the chief minister of the state of Bihar. And he was from a Musahar family.
Oh.
In that article with Quartz India by Amitava Kumar, Jin recalled how his father was beaten by his landlord after suggesting that Jin was smart enough for an education.
Wow.
Just for suggesting that his son, who was Musahar, should go to school.
Yeah.
He got beaten
up. He got beaten
up
for it. Yeah.
Like, I know landlords here suck and everything, but at least they can't beat you up. Eventually, of course, Jin was able to go to school.
Yeah.
He suffered constant derision and abuse. But as an educated young Musahar, he became the face of another man's political campaign who did win his office. And Jin knew that if he could raise votes for another guy, well, he should be able to do it for himself too, right? So he went ahead and ran his own campaign, got elected, and rose the ranks, eventually becoming chief minister.
Yeah, it's like what we said earlier about the caste system tiers being political focus groups.
Yeah.
Where this guy, whoever Jin was kind of interning with, sort of.
Yeah, campaigning.
Had said, oh, well, you're an educated Musahar. I'm going to put you on my parade float and we'll go around and I'm going to point to you and say, hey, this Musahar kid gets funds from the government to go to school. You all could do that too if you vote for me.
Right.
And so it became, you know, he was the face of a whole demographic of people. And he was like, well, hey, they'd probably vote for me directly, right?
Right.
So, you know, we won't comment as to this guy's politics because, I mean, we don't know that much about him. He might suck. I don't know. At a brief glance at his Wikipedia page, he definitely had a ton of scandals and he was effectively forced to resign after a year. But that's not the point. The point is hopefully things are changing for the Musahar, for the Dalits, you know, and that for the scheduled castes in India in general.
Right.
That's our hope from what little we know, from our perspective.
Yeah.
Of course, we always want people who are in a bad way to be in a better way.
Absolutely.
And if it costs the people who are in a great way a little something to make that happen, well, you know, that's how...
Cry me a river.
To put it lightly.
And put it in Galore where they don't have enough water.
Yes. Although they probably don't want your salty tear river.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Cry me a river... Distill that river, filter it, and then send it through.
Then put it in, yeah. But yeah, and a lot of those changes are because of this guy being so freaking awesome.
Yeah.
And like impressive and, I don't know, just again, pure and wholesome in his intentions.
There's a statue of him, of Dashrath Manji, in Galore. And this guy, Jin Ram Manji, when he was elected, at least in this article, he told a story, he said a lot of politicians, when they get elected, they travel somewhere, they go to a statue of a particular god, they thank them for everything. And he said he went to Galore and thanked Dashrath Manji at his statue for showing the Musahara people that, you know, you can do something.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to just sit here and take it. We can be proactive and take action. And man, that guy took action.
Yeah.
22 years carving a hole in a mountain out of love of his wife.
Right.
And that's a beautiful story.
Every day.
I hate that he had to do it. it's one of those stories where I'm like, I don't even want to praise it because the fact that it had to be done is not like, oh, what a hero. It's like, well, why the fuck was this a problem in the first place?
Yeah.
You know?
So and true.
That's tough with some of these feel-good underdog stories where you're like, oh, I want to clap and just, yes, let's make more of these stories happen. And it's mm-hmm. like, no, let's make less of these stories need to happen.
In a better regulated world, he would not have had to do this.
Right.
But yeah, I agree. But still, just incredible for someone who had no political power, no power in any way, no money, no standing, no nothing.
Right.
Just said, you know what I do have is a fucking chisel, and I already break rocks for some other guy.
Right.
So let me break rocks for myself and the people around me who need it. You know, it's just like he really had nothing and he gave everything.
And again, I'm just picturing myself slumped over on the couch with my the temperature just where I want it, bitching about how it's a little drafty, and I've got my PlayStation controller in my hand, and I'm digging a hole in the side of a mountain on Minecraft, like I'm exhausted from it. Like, oh, this is gonna take forever.
My long day with and, my diamond axe.
yeah. He didn't have no enchantments on his chisel.
He didn't have no chest.
Efficiency 3.
What's that chest you just made?
A shulker box.
Yeah, I didn't have any shulker boxes.
This sounds like I'm a Minecraft guy, and I'm not. I very casually, occasionally play for a devoted week at a time, twice a year.
But he does have a really big house.
Yeah.
And a lot of carts that run to a train station that he also builds. And now he's building like a cabin in the woods that will have a big performance arena underneath it.
Yeah. It's a labor of love. Look, that's years
I know,
in the making.
Just playing.
it's pretty impressive. So if anybody wants to send me a civilian award, it's pretty nice.
Calling you Baba Eli in your Minecraft.
No. Please don't call me
don't
that.
Don't call me Baba Eli. He does not deserve it.
I very much do not deserve that.
But I think this is so beautiful that, like, I don't know, this just dedication between these two people.
Yeah.
That she would, again, every day walk hours to bring him lunch and then walk hours to go home. And then that as soon as, you know, he was like, it was really brought home to him how fucked up it was that there was no hospital nearby for anybody, not just his wife, but for anyone.
Yeah.
That he was like, you know what? Somebody has to do something. And I know it's not going to be anybody. Yep. It's going to be me.
Yep. And I think that he proved that in, again, doing it and no one ever came to help him. They never showed up with a backhoe or dynamite or anything like that. That just proves right there that no one was going to help. They could complain and die and suffer as much as they needed and no one would ever bat an eye about it. They'd just be like, well, there's more of you.
Yeah.
So brutal. But yeah, I mean, that's a good point about his wife, too. I was thinking that like she had her own trek there for a long time.
Yeah.
Climbing over that mountain every day. That's no small task either.
Yeah.
Just bring her husband lunch while he worked, you know, to support them. And she's probably taking care of the goats back home, too.
And the kids. Let's not forget.
Yep.
But yeah, it's like I say, it's just like, you know, you look around, you have very little, and then you find a way to show your love.
Yeah.
And how much you appreciate and care for the other person with whatever you got.
Right.
And what she had was only her time and her attention.
And a little bread. Yeah.
I want you to have that. I want to take care of you the best way I can.
Ugh. Yeah.
You know, that's so wonderful.
Yep.
And I will say, too, you know, talking about goals in the new year, if you have a big goal that seems insurmountable, definitely remember Josh Roth, who started with a single rock and ended with a road. And it makes me think my dad, a piece of advice that he gave me when I was a kid that I've never forgotten that I love is that he's like, you know, whenever you're faced with a really big job that looks impossible, just think to yourself, how does an ant eat an elephant?
Mm-hmm.
One bite at a time.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yep.
Love it.
Yep.
Sometimes that first bite is the hardest bite. Sometimes it's the second bite.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I could totally see him being like real worked up. Like, I'm going to build this road. And he gets to the top of the mountain and he breaks that one rock. And then he's like, oh, shit. Uh-huh. Now I have to do this a billion trillion more times.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, it would have been more impossible. It would have seemed more impossible the longer you did it. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
And so like after 10 years, amazing that he kept going. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing that he kept going.
what's that? A journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. You just got to pick up a chisel and a hammer and just start. I mean, I think of it as a completely different aspect, but I think of it as a writer sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to write.
The blank page.
It is the hardest thing in the world to write. And you sit down at a blank page with the most detailed and brilliant idea any human being has ever come up with, like authors in history will weep mm-hmm. when they read mm-hmm. your story. And then you sit down in front of a blank page and you're like, duh, what are words? You know, and you just got to start.
Yeah.
You just got to type a word and then the next word and then the next one. And eventually they might mean something. And if they don't, at least you did something.
At least you tried it.
As opposed to nothing. I mean, this guy could have died on that mountain, you know, a year into his project. And he probably would have been proud of that he tried.
At least made a noise enough to say there should be a road.
Yeah.
There should be a road.
Yeah.
If I have to do it, I'll do it. But there should be a road. I bet you're right. Anytime he died, it would have been like, at least somebody heard me.
Yep.
Even if they don't finish it.
Yep. And at least I didn't just sit around wishing that it existed.
True. Yeah.
You know.
I went out and did my damnedest.
Yeah. So, yes, that is the energy this year.
Mm-hmm.
Carry it with you.
Yes.
Right?
Let's do our damnedest this year in 2022.
Proactive.
Yes.
Decisive changes.
Caring about the people around you.
Yes.
Finding a way to be of service.
Yes. And no one's going to do it for you.
And no one's going to do it for you.
If you want to help people out, you can't just keep hoping and make a noise.
It's true.
You got to take action.
Mm-hmm.
You got to step up. You got to do something. Oof. Oh, now that is scary. I just scared myself.
Just like, well, we're saying it all to all y'all, but I don't know how much we're going to be standing
you've
up there
to.
With shit. Either.
You know what? You've got to, and you've got to tell other people to do it too, because then you make yourself accountable.
That's true.
And because a lot of times I'll get online and I'll be like, you better call your senators, even though I haven't yet, because
right.
I know that by the end of that night, I'm going to be like, oh, I'm a hypocrite. I better call my senators. And I do, make myself do it.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So, but whether it's a whole policy change or just something little, something just helping
someone
your
clean your house.
Your, yeah, helping your spouse or your family or your kids out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Build a little ramp for your dog. Well, I don't know. I'm spitballing here. just pick up a hammer and a chisel and start.
Yeah.
And that's the best we can do.
Think of Dashrat Manji.
Yeah.
Who just went for it.
Yeah. He will be in my heart this year for sure.
Yes.
Yes.
Dashrat energy for 2022.
Please let us know what your plans are for this year and how you plan to use that energy moving forward.
Yeah.
We would love to share that with all the other listeners. Or if you just want to share it with us, we'd love to hear it too.
Absolutely.
Reach out. Tell us what you thought of the story. Please, please fix our history of the caste system. We did our best. We really did. But I just know someone's going to write and be like, here's what you got totally wrong.
I know.
And maybe not. Maybe we'll get the Padma Shri award.
The Padma Shri of podcasting.
Seriously doubt it. But we'd love to hear your feedback. Please don't hesitate to reach out. You know how to reach us. Our email is romance@iheartmedia.com.
Or find us on social media on Twitter and Instagram. I'm @DynamiteBoom.
And I'm @OhGreat. It's Eli.
And the show is @RidicRomance.
We cannot wait to hear from you, and we cannot wait to bring you more episodes this year, so stay tuned. We'll be back later this week.
And happy 2022!
Woo!
So long, friends. It's time to go. Thanks for listening to our show. Tell your friends, neighbors, uncles, and aunts to listen to our show, Ridiculous Romance.